The Social Screenwriters Podcast. The Social Screenwriters Podcast. The Social Screenwriters Podcast. Where Andy talks to people he met on the internet.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Social Screenwriters Podcast, episode 5. We've made it through 4. I can't believe it. I'm your host, Andy Compton, and today on the show, we have a very special guest. I don't know why I'm talking like this. I don't know, dude. I'm fucking loopy, I guess. I've had a little too much LaCroix, all right? I'm buzzing off that sparkling water. Anyway, we have on the show today everybody's friend, Jennifer Dunn, at Writer Jen Dunn. Jen is a writer and producer based in Georgia, kind of working a lot in the Atlanta area. And, you know, we got into a little everything. We talked about who she is as a writer, her brand, her background in tech, and the way she used it to, the way that one single tweet asking other writers about their opinions on writers groups led to her making a Google spreadsheet to help connect writers on Twitter to writing groups, which I was actually a part of that. I joined a writers group from that spreadsheet, and it was like just a really, really great experience. And I made like 7 new friends, I think 7, who I still talk to today. And yeah, it was a really awesome experience. And she, from there, took that spreadsheet and used her own money and created an app. And it's called the Notes Community app. And you can learn more about it at notescommunity.com. She'll be talking about it today. But if you don't finish the episode, just know you can go and sign up at notescommunity.com. And it's free. And you can find a writer's group. And having a writer's group is honestly like such a great thing for emerging writers. It's just an awesome resource. You'll make a few friends and you'll have that first line of defense. Is that what you would say? No. I mean, you just have that first wave of readers. I don't know why I can't articulate that, but you'll have some people who will read your shit and tell you if it's good or not. And if it's not good, how can it be good? But anyway, yeah, she also runs a company called Copperhead Media, which is a screenwriting and production company, again, based in Georgia. And yeah, Jen is just awesome. I've seen her on Twitter for a long time, always been a great supporter of everyone, and she's just truly one of the good ones. So it was a pleasure to talk to her, and this thing she did for the community is honestly, like, fucking huge. Just, anyone who's been around for a minute knows just what a big deal this is, that she put this together. And I think that really speaks to the kind of person she is. She saw an issue in our community and stepped in and, you know, put in the work and the money to make things a little better for all of us to connect. And I think that that's just really awesome. And I will note now, again, if you don't listen to the whole episode, on the Notes Community website, there is a donate button at the bottom, and she did all of this for free. She spent her own money, and if you want to donate, then you can do that there. And that leads me to my next thing, which is thank you so much to the people who did donate to the Social Screenwriters Podcast PayPal, which can be found at the link tree on our Twitter or Instagram. You'll see it right there. I think it's on my personal link tree, too. Super appreciate that. And again, you know, I'm just going to leave it open, but I'll usually mention it that you can donate if you want to, if you have the money. If you don't, not a big deal. I know how it goes. But yeah, just wanted to kind of throw that out there, because we don't have advertisers yet. And, you know, if there's anyone out there and you want to advertise your company on this podcast, we can talk about it. But yeah. Let's go ahead and jump into the episode, guys. This is Jen Dunn.
Okay. We're just going to hop on in. Jennifer Dunn, what's up? How you doing?
Oh, my gosh, Andy. I'm so happy to be here with you.
I am very happy to have you. We've been friends on Twitter for a good minute now.
Oh yeah, years, like, decades.
Couple, yeah, decades, I would say. Yeah. We were like right when Twitter was like in beta mode. We friended each other. Yeah. No, but I joined in like March of 2020. I feel like, well, I didn't join. I had an inactive Twitter for many years. I feel like a lot of people were like this. And then during the pandemic, I was like, I'm gonna figure out Twitter. Nice. How long have you been active on there?
Oh my, so probably around 2019, actually. I got really lucky. Right before the pandemic. And then of course during the pandemic, everything sort of exploded.
Yeah.
I met a lot of people in person back when we were doing that at mm-hmm. this Screencraft conference. Mm-hmm. And which was in Atlanta where I live at the time. And then I met a lot of people at Austin Film Festival in 2019. And so mm-hmm. I was really lucky to kind of, you know, have I don't know. I guess when you meet people in person, you know, like we're doing right now, even though it's on Zoom, you're at least like, oh, this is like a genuine real person that I like. So I kind of, you know, I was lucky enough to meet some of those people before everything shut down.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. You know what? That actually segues good into my first question. So let's hop into it, because you have a lot of cool things going on and we're going to talk about them in the episode. But I want to like start right at the beginning of how did you get into screenwriting?
Oh, that is a great question. So I was little and I saw this movie called Soap Dish, and it was about soap opera writing. And I just was like, oh my God, that looks so fun. You're with your friends. And of course, you know, it's a comedy movie. So it's a little crazier than real life, but it looks so fun. So it was just always in the back of my mind. But so of course I did what any, you know, aspiring writer does. And I went into tech.
of course,
you know, as we do.
Yeah. Weirdly that tech background is now kind of coming in useful for you. So that's awesome.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so in tech, I had just the great privilege of somebody, especially somebody who grew up between a cemetery and a trailer park. I had the great privilege of taking 6 months off, not having to work. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, of course, I was like, you know, slept for a month just to get the stress off of me. And then after that, I'm like, what do I want to do? Like, what if the sky was the limit? What I'd do? And it was TV writing. Just happened to go to that Screencraft conference. I had not written anything yet when I went to that. It was in Atlanta. It was, you know, in my price range. I'll just go. I'll see what this is about. Mm-hmm. Met some great people. Gina DeAngelis, who is like a friend and mentor to this day. Yeah. Amazing. I was so lucky. She sat down next to me and just changed my life, and she does not realize it. And I keep trying to tell her, but yeah. So from there I wrote my first pilot. I was like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And that was called Birdsong. And then I did not know what to do though from there, really, because I just, you know, I met three or four interesting people. I was a little bit on screenwriter Twitter. So I just entered it in every contest I could ever think of ever. Probably 30 contests. I mean, I'm not even joking. You guys, I don't recommend that now.
I didn't. Yeah, right.
I was new and I was like, well, here's a path. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I got really lucky. Like it won the Atlanta Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, thank you. And that led me to meeting the programmer there, who then knew a actress who was looking for a writer who writes sort of Southern Gothic, dark stuff, that exactly what I write. Introduced me to her. And then she's the one who gave me sort of my first paid TV writing gig, which was rewriting a pilot. So I've not been staffed yet. Don't get me wrong there, but you know, I've been now I can say I'm a paid TV writer just kind of from that, you know, shotgun approach to entering contests.
Wow. That is awesome. Yeah. I hear you. I think a lot of us get the contest bug in the beginning. And then in hindsight, it's like, yeah, that might've been quite a bit of wasted money, but at the same time, like, you got to go through trial and error, learning how to navigate this business as for those of us not in LA, especially, it's like, what can I do? Contests I can enter from home, you know, that kind of seems viable. But that's crazy that you kind of hit the ground running. And that pilot was called Birdsong.
Yes.
Yeah. I've seen you talk about it. Also, you know, we'll get to that question later. I'm going to hold back. I'm getting ahead of myself. that's really interesting and super cool. You met Gina there. She's become a friend of mine over Twitter. She's just awesome. Right. Super supportive.
Yes. Yep.
You can tell, you can kind of pluck out some of the real good ones in the community who are just always, always cool. Mm-hmm. So I don't know this question about you. Are you repped?
No, I'm not. Oh. I have been repped. Okay. And as like a businesswoman, yeah, I've been self-employed since I was about 27. I'm not saying how long ago that was. It was a long time ago. Uh-huh. And so I just, you know, I decided that there's some things I could do on my own that I didn't need a rep for at the time. Now things are getting kind of crazy. I wish I had my rep or a rep, but at the time I was like, yeah, you know, maybe I got a rep too early. So,
yeah. Well, it's going to come back around. I guarantee you. It seems like you're doing really well for sure. Okay, cool. So unrepped, free agent, Jennifer is available. Y'all, if there's any reps out there listening. So this is something that I ask everyone, but for you, I'm really excited because, the question is, how would you describe your brand? And for me, I've seen you talk about brand and I've seen you write out your brand in a 180 or whatever it is, 280 character tweet. And it's really solid. And, it's got like little interesting tidbits. Like earlier you mentioned the cemetery and the trailer park. I always just thought that's like, it's just such a, like in a few words, you tell us this really super interesting, intriguing thing that makes you different from other people. But anyway, how would you describe your brand?
Oh man, I'm on the spot now. I don't have it memorized anymore. Actually, I just did the Writer's Lab, like a Meryl Streep funded Writer's Lab, which is insane. They work with you kind of on your brand. And so it's changed a little bit. Well, okay, it hasn't changed. I've just cemented it a little bit. Now I say that my brand now, or my goal now is that I want to change the world by writing about the people that I grew up with and letting them be main characters. I think these people, you know, people who are in poverty, who really kind of feel left behind. It's like one line tagline is white trash liberal elite. That's who I am. Yeah. And there's a lot of people like me here. And I think that's another thing that kind of gets lost. If people say, oh, okay, that flyover, that's Trump country. They're all Trump supporters. Like, no, we're not. Like, I come from a strong union family. My family has, every sort of continent almost is represented in my family just from, through marriage and things like that. Like, we are very diverse. And I think that that also just doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, you're right. It is so much more nuanced than I think we portray at large.
Yes.
Yeah. So I really like that. Okay, cool. So let's talk about you kind of personally as a writer. I always think this is kind of interesting because every writer, I don't think you could find two writers in the world who go about writing the exact same way. So with your routine, how is it unique? Like, what does Jennifer Dunn do when you sit down to write? Like, is it daytime, nighttime? Do you drink coffee? Do you drink water? Is there noise in the background, music, anything? Like, what's your regular writing routine?
Oh, those are really good questions. It's usually early in the morning. I'm one of those really annoying morning people. I just, my brain works better after 2 p.m., 4 p.m. I'm done. I'm not going to.
Right.
It's over. Usually, in the morning with my morning coffee, I definitely need silence. I do make a playlist for every project I do. I make a playlist, but I listen to it when I'm in the car, when I'm doing chores and things like that, just to sort of get me in the mood. Because I guess, and this might be a question you ask me later, but can I go ahead and kind of tell you about my process of conceptualizing?
Let's do it all in one, because that's actually the next question. So
perfect. Yeah. I am a percolator, and I know a lot of people are not like this. And I've even been told that, Jennifer, you need to get faster at this, but it's not what I do. I am getting faster. Like, each pilot I've written has gotten a little faster. But for me, I come up with an idea. A lot of times it's a great character. And then I sort of come up with a really cool thing that happens to them at some point, like usually kind of like a cool action, a cool set piece, something, that happens, or just a fun character interaction, whatever. And so I know I want to write to that eventually. So then I just figure out like, okay, how does that happen? How do I get them there? And I think about it for like 6 months. Like, I think, and I make my playlist and and then things change. And then when I start to write, I actually write pretty fast, like probably, a month, 6 weeks, which I know is not fast to everybody. It's fast to me.
And yeah, that's fast to me.
Thank you. Yeah. But I've thought about it forever. So it's not, I've still been conceptualizing it. So really, all, 9 months, a year is how long it takes me to develop something. But when it's down on paper, it's pretty well done. Now, of course, that's not to say I don't, all of my pilots are in rewrites right now for different either production companies or just because somebody has said like, oh, there's a big problem here, or, you know, with a, like a logical problem or something here. Like, so I get it. I'm not doing a ton of drafts, and then I'm doing the drafts in my head. Now, I would love to be one of those people that just sits down and writes and writes something over a weekend and then, okay, and then I fix it the next weekend and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just not me. And I'm kind of stopped trying to make myself be that person.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is finding out who you are, you know, and your process and what works for you and what doesn't, and accepting your fate as a writer. Exactly. Like, this is who I am. And I can't really try to change it. You can try. And at some point in our careers, we will have to change the way we go about something because of a singular project's like ridiculous deadline or something like that. And that's just when you worry, like, I know who I am as a writer. I will do this because I want to get the project done. However, I worry about like the quality because I know myself, and I know that sometimes I need ideas to simmer a little longer than that.
Yeah,
that's something I worry about. But also I've heard many a pros talk about that like, yeah, you know, probably wasn't my best work. You know, because we had this going on and it was 4-week turnaround and da 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 da. So it's the business.
Yep.
And that's something I think.
Yeah. So if we're in a writer's room, you know, we got to go fast. And I don't mind going fast. In fact, I've done one of those 30-day challenges where I wrote a little short story every day, and it was amazing. And some of them were awesome. Some of them were terrible, or they were just like the bare minimum, like, you know, let me just kind of rewrite something I wrote before a long time ago. I just got to get it done for the day. Yeah. It was really fun. And like, I think to me, it's sort of like eating your vegetables and, you know, drinking all your water and exercising. I know that's good for me. Like, and working, writing every day and trying to finish something every day is good for me. And I don't always do it though. So I do think that is.
I don't think that you'll find a writer who's perfect out there doing it every day. We all know sometimes you just need a break. I mean, and I'm someone who really likes to work myself maybe too hard at times. And I have to remind myself, though, you know, that like, yeah, it's okay to just turn the laptop off a couple hours earlier tonight and just chill. And I'm not even talking writing. Like, there's just other shit I have going on, and day job. A lot of us have day jobs, you know, so you're dealing with that. But sometimes it's like, yeah, dude, just chill, watch a movie. You know, like, relax, and it's okay. The world's not going to end if you take even 3 entire days off writing.
Yeah, you know, it really doesn't.
Yeah,
I got some of my greatest writing inspiration. I was in Yellowstone. Yellowstone doesn't have internet. There's like one store that has internet there, and I went there one time. I was there for a week, and like, you know, so I couldn't be on the internet. My brain, though, it just, you know, it healed kind of like during the pandemic when nature healed a little bit. It was my brain it was healing from all this, like, oh, I need to check my Twitter, my phone, my email. Yeah. And that was amazing. So when I have the means, I may never, I'm going to try to recreate that kind of situation from time to time, like a week with no internet. Cause I came back to and wrote like 4,000 words. I was working on a novel at the time, but wrote like 4,000 words afterward. And it just, you know, I don't know. Your brain just kind of gets away from this like dopamine hit of the constant communication.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can only imagine how powerful I would be if I didn't have the internet, if I didn't have social media. I mean, I would still want Google, but like, I am straight up addicted to Twitter now. But like, even before Twitter, like, I've always been addicted to just bullshit online and social media and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's a lot of us, but I'd be killing it. I would be like, I'd have like a 5-picture deal at Paramount or some shit if I didn't have social media.
It'll still happen. Don't worry about that.
It's just going to take a lot longer. I'll be like 73 signing that contract and then tweeting about it right away. So with your process, though, you kind of dived into it a little bit, but I just want to know, like, when you have like a brand new idea, what is the very first thing that you like to do? I know you said sometime, you know, a script, like you'll do a lot of planning, you'll make a playlist and stuff, but like, I'm just wondering, cause we talk a lot on Twitter about outlines and we talk. So for me personally, like when I have an idea, I can't really start the outline until I can write a log line that I just kind of feel good about, and it's subject to change, but just like, this is who the character is, this is the dilemma they're going through, and this is what they stand against. I just like laying out those three little simple things. And again, subject to change, but I can't really, that's the first thing I like to do. It just makes me feel good. So for you, yeah. So for you, what's the very first thing you do after an idea?
You know what? I generally tell somebody about it. A lot of times it's my mom. My mom is, my mom and dad, I'm so lucky. Like, I grew up with a lot of friends who did not have both parents or any parent in the picture. Mm-hmm. My parents are divorced, but my parents were, I don't know, I'm kind of getting off topic, but I'm coming back.
No, this is good.
But yeah. My parents, like, as I've grown up, like when I was little, I hate you guys. But as I've grown up, like, I realized that, oh my God, I have been the most fortunate person in the world. My parents love me. They want me to do like cool stuff in the arts. They're not trying to make me go be a lawyer or whatever if I don't want to. So a lot of times I call my mom, or me and my dad will go for a drive and I'll tell my dad about the idea. And they don't really, you know, they'll ask questions and stuff like that, but they're kind of like the best managers, because they don't oh, well, how about this? You should do this instead. Blah, 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 blah. They just kind of listen, because like, to them, this is hilarious to me, but you know, they're like these larger than life people who I look to for guidance. But to them, I'm like, this is my domain. Like, I'm the one that's good at this. So they'll just listen and ask questions and just like help me flesh out a story. And sometimes it's also friends, kind of depending on, you know, the topic of the story. There might be, and I have some other, you know, Twitter friends, real life friends who I would go and like, hey, can I just tell you about the story? And yeah. For whatever reason, the talking it out really helps me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. Talking it out is a big thing. And you ever feel it when you're doing it, like you're just rambling and you're like, literally all I'm doing is just talking to myself right now. Yes. In the presence of this other person. And when you have good people around you who understand that and just let you go, it's like, yeah, letting you do your thing. No, that's awesome. I'm the same way though. Like when I was a kid, I was kind of a crazy kid. And definitely put my mom through a lot of stress and things like that. But now, like, my mom is like one of my best friends, you know, like she's an amazing person. Same way as you, of like, chase your dream, you know, because I think she's a person who kind of like, you know, worked a normal job and like has a lot of friends who work normal jobs and, you know, has just been around people like that. So she's really, really cool about like, chase your dream, because you only have one life. Yeah. So why wouldn't you? And I think that's awesome, because, you know, I know people, and then you see it in TV and film all the time, like the trope of the parent who wants you to be a doctor. They want you to be a lawyer. They don't want you to be an artist. And I'm really, really lucky that I've never had to even feel for one second that I shouldn't chase this art dream, which is really dope. And, you know, I don't have kids, but when I do have kids, I want to be the same kind of parent, because life is too short to only worry about money and, you know, material things and labels and things like that. Like, do whatever makes you happy.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And I just don't want to ever like forget how lucky I am, or ever, you know, just act like, oh yeah, why call up my mom? I've had people again on Twitter. I know we're massively online. I've had people on Twitter say, man, I wish my parents would read my scripts. And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, I feel so bad for you. Like, my parents are like, when is this done? I want to read it now.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, they're your biggest fans. That's the Jennifer Dunn fan club. Like, you that's know, them. Co-presidents. Yep. That's amazing. Oh, by the way, so do you outline? You already said that earlier.
I do.
You?
Yeah, I'm an okay. outline. Not a crazy fancy outline, but I know where things are going.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And usually I'll write the biggest beats, but then the ending is really important to me, trying to figure out where I'm going. But then once I'm writing, I try to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be the outline. It can trail off organically, you know, because there's something to just going through that process and playing the movie in your head as you're writing and being like, oh, never mind, this is what needs to happen. Okay, cool. So you already told me first draft, 6 weeks, a month, something like that, after proper planning. So what is the first thing that you do when you complete a first draft? Do you like to put it away? Do you immediately go out for feedback? Do you tell mom and dad and show it to mom and dad? Do you give it to a paid service? Like, what's the first thing Jennifer Dunn is doing whenever you finish a first draft?
Oh, great question. Yeah. So I do send it to mom and dad, of course. I mean, I will probably put it away overnight, but normally, again, like with my writing process, it's kind of like, it's how I want it by the time I write it down. I'm not one of those people that writes it down and then changes it a lot. It's like, okay, I've thought about it. Like, I've written in my head 900 times before it's on the page, which again, I kind of wish I wasn't like that, but you know, what can we do? So I'll send it to Gina, who we talked about before, Gina DeAngelis, who is just wonderful. And people should make her movies, by the way. And then send it to, of course, like mom and dad, and maybe like another friend. And then I have a writer's group that I normally send it to. But that's just like when it comes my turn. So it might not be my turn, you know, at the time. And so of course I have to wait for that. But yeah, that's normally what I do. I don't put it away for, you know, a week or whatever, kind of let it percolate. I just normally just send it out right away because I'm impatient. I want feedback right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Definitely. Yeah. And everyone's different because usually for me, I do put it away for at least a week. And then I like to read it as a PDF, not opened up in Final Draft or anything. And
mess just
read through it. Yeah. Because I will. I'll mess with it the whole time. And it's like, dude, just read it. Just read it through and then kind of go back and revisit. But, cool. Yeah. I figured it was probably going to mom and dad after we talked about the last question.
Mom and dad and Gina.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So, right here, I'm going to just kind of throw this in. So you have something really exciting going on right now for screenwriters and those in the Twitter community and beyond. When did you make the spreadsheet?
Oh gosh, it's a long time ago. It was November, 2020 when I made the spreadsheet.
That's what
it's
I thought
every year. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And so for those who don't know, Jen, well, tell us about how that whole thing came about with the spreadsheet. Because I know you had sent a tweet talking about writers groups.
Yeah, exactly what happened. I, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and things like that. So that's why I'm so glad to be here. And a lot of writers who I admire who have a career will say, oh, well, you know, when I finish my draft, I send it to my writers group. And I was like, I don't have a writers group. But then I just sort of thought, well, everybody else must have a writers group. Why don't I have one? What's going on? I'm being left out. So I sent a tweet just asking like, hey, how did y'all find your writers groups? And there was an overwhelming response of like, I don't know. I don't have one. I've never been able to figure it out. I don't have, you know, other writer friends really. And I was just kind of like, oh my God, this is a huge problem. So I created a spreadsheet. It was insanely detailed. I probably too detailed, but whatever. And just asking people like, hey, you know, where do you live? What do you write? And then I let people just kind of look over those profiles and say, hey, you come be in my group. Or people just started groups and other people on the spreadsheet, just like in a new tab, people would start a group and then other people would go and join. But it got crazy. Like it filled up just, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but groups filled up immediately. And just people, and then people got in there and kind of helped me. They would curate things and like a group that was full, they would move it to the back. So people didn't have to go search so much. And it was a really lovely, like, kind of real-time thing you could see in a Google spreadsheet of people going in and creating groups and working together. And yeah, it was just a lovely thing. And that all was probably November, December of 2020.
Yeah. And what a sense of community too, you know, like it's kind of like you made the spreadsheet, you put it out and then the community kind of took care of it, you know?
Exactly. Like, I didn't do anything else to it really. I would go fix it every once in a while if like somebody accidentally deleted the headers or something, you know, something silly like that. But no, I really had nothing else to do with it besides making sure I sent it to people. I didn't want the link just floating around out there because, you know, security.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Definitely. No, I think it was super successful. I actually, at the time, was like making a transition like into horror writing. Mm-hmm. Long story. I'll tell it sometime on the podcast. But I was convinced to just shift my entire career to horror all of a sudden whenever you were making that spreadsheet. So I joined a horror group and it was called Creepy Clutch. And quite a few people from screenwriting Twitter that, you know, and love were in that group. Great horror writers. And it was such an amazing experience to me. And we stayed together for like 6-7 months. And then I dropped out because I knew that while I love horror, I'm going to go back to my dramedy kind of roots, you know, so I respectfully bowed out. But it was an amazing group. And I'm still friends with all those people today. I think that what you did with that is just like, it's just so cool and kind of speaks to who you are. That you saw like an issue in our community and you were like, well, I think I can, you know, make this better. And you did, and you created a thing that like, not even just writers groups, but I can't imagine how many friendships blossomed out of that spreadsheet. Because like I said, like those people that I was in a writers group with, like, I'm like kind of close to, because when you read someone's writing, you're reading a piece of them, you know? So it's kind of a real fast, like I do improv. And I feel like improv is the fastest way to become close to someone because you're really bearing your all out there with them, being super mega vulnerable.
and trusting in that person, you know, and I've always said doing an improv scene with someone is the closest way to like bond, or the fastest way to bond. Hmm. But okay, so cool. So the screenwriting spreadsheet is out there. And then how do we come to the Notes app, the Notes community app?
Well, I also like, I may be a little more paranoid than other people, but immediately as we got to like 200 people on there, it was also 200 people's email addresses and things like that. And I was like, you know what? If I share this with one crappy actor and they'll, I mean, you can't really hurt anybody from their email address, but they can start spamming people and stuff like that. And it was just kind of like, I started to feel a little uneasy about that. Like, oh my God, like, you know, I don't want anybody to get spammed or, you know, catfished or something happening here. So that was my first thought. But then I was like, also like, this is also difficult seeing people, you know, helping me curate and move things around and stuff like that. And then there's a list of 300 and something now people on there. Like if you're going through reading that, like, oh my God, how much, you know, that's a lot of trouble. It's like technology, you know, we can rebuild this. We can do this with technology. So I asked a friend and he couldn't, like a good engineer friend, and he helped me just kind of like conceptualize the bones of it. And unfortunately, like, you know, if you know anything about the internet web development, those jobs are so in demand right now. Like all my friends who were helping me, because I do work in tech too, but I'm not an engineer. They kept like getting these crazy promotions or this work. And they're like, sorry, I just don't have time to work on this passion project with you because I have to go, you know, conquer the world. Okay, you guys, I guess. So I kind of had just a group of friends, you know, I paid them like through along the way though, you come in and out, dip in and out at different times. And that's kind of why it took so long just to get this damn thing taken. Cause it's not, if any engineer goes in there and looks at it, they'll be like, okay, this is not like the most sophisticated thing in the world. I'm like, it's not, but it took a long time because we're all very busy people. And of course I have a day job too in tech. So that's kind of where it came from. So I had so much help. I just love those people so much. I'm not going to call them out by name though. I don't want to like get them in trouble if they should have been moonlighting or whatever, you know.
Much love to all those people.
Yes, to my wonderful engineers. And it just took a while just to also, I mean, and sometimes I would be slow. They'd be like, hey, check this change, how does this look? And you know, it'd take me a week because I have a million things going on as well. But finally last Thursday we were able to launch the damn thing, and it's going great.
That is so awesome. Yeah, it seems like it's off and running well. So it's called Notes Community, and people can find out more about it on your Twitter, and you are at writer Jen Dunn.
That's right. Yeah, J-E-N-N Dunn, D-U-N-N.
Yeah, awesome. And then notescommunity.com is the website you can go to. I just think that it's super, super cool that you turn this into an app, like, especially for someone like me who doesn't know shit about tech or web development. It's like, she made an app? That's like incredible. Like, I just think it's such a cool service. And like, honestly, it's kind of similar to what I am trying to do with this podcast was I think that you kind of just saw like a community that could use something. You know what I mean? And you took your skills and applied it. Whereas I didn't have podcasting skills at all before this. Still learning every single time I do it. However, all I had to do was buy a Yeti mic. And here I am. I'm just like fucking killing it. No, I'm not really.
Yes, but, you are.
Thank you. Thank you. It's like, it's just cool, I guess, like what our screenwriting community is on Twitter. And it's just been really, really cool because I'm much like you with your spreadsheet. I'm sure for me with the podcast, with people like reaching out and like saying nice things and like having genuine interest in this, that alone, I'm just like, really? Like, you're into it? That's so weird to me. And then it's like, all right, well, I'm just going to keep going. And I'm sure like the spreadsheet to the app, that's kind of what it was for you, was like, you guys are enjoying this. I have this capability. It's a lot of work, but I'm willing to do it to help the community. And I just think that's super cool that, and I encourage anyone else out there in the screenwriting community, if you have like a skill that you can bring to help better our community and bring us closer together, make some shit because we want to see it.
Yeah, hell yeah, for sure. Like that. So sometimes you bring that up, it's funny. I'll see people like, hey, I'm going to buy a bunch of copies of Final Draft for people, or I'm going to sponsor this person or whatever. I'm like, oh man, I want to do that. And I'm like, wait, no, I'm doing Notes Community. Like, let me just do what's in my wheelhouse rather than try to go copy like what this guy or this lady is doing, you know? Because we all have like, some people give great notes, you know, or some people, you have kind of money to, you know, they've had some good fortune and they have some money to spare to buy these things or sponsor somebody to a, you know, a retreat or something like that. But yeah, this is kind kind of my thing that I can do. They've just kind of, hey, I've been like working my whole life for this. It's been good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And like me and Guy Crawford talked about that in the last episode. Spoiler alert for you, but like for everyone else, his episode will be out by tomorrow. However, we talked about, you know, the pros on Twitter who kind of reach back and give us a helping hand, maybe do a thread about their experiences, things like that. Or sometimes just straight up be like, because he had some experiences with a couple pros who like passed his work on to like Circle of Confusion and were like, hey, you should read Guy. They weren't getting anything out of it, you know, and we just kind of talked about how, should we ever make it one day, I would love to do stuff like that just because you know how hard it is. And if I'm ever in a position where I can help, you know, someone who I think is talented and just hasn't been discovered yet, then, you know, why wouldn't you? It's just, it's a really, really beautiful thing to see the community, you know, help each other.
I totally agree. I think most people on here are just super, super nice and they want to help and they're looking forward to the day when they can reach back if they're not there yet. Yeah. I love our little community that we've created.
Yeah, same. I know. Yeah, it's really, really nice. And then, you know, there are certain moments whenever certain people kind of out themselves as not being the greatest in the community. And that's a whole new thing to be proud of whenever the community comes together and collectively says, fuck off, you know, you're being an asshole. Yeah, which we've been seeing. 2022 is off to a hot start.
Oh my gosh. I know. Everybody's really going to just be themselves on 2022, aren't they?
Yep. It seems that way, but you know, I'd rather have them be loud about it. Cause now we know.
Yeah, now we know. Exactly.
Now we know. Don't go lurking, you know, hiding in the bushes and, you know, doing something real shitty one day.
Exactly.
Anyway. Okay. So let's hop away from screenwriting for 2 seconds. What are your hobbies outside of screenwriting? I mean, I know you do tech, but that's work.
Yeah.
What do you like to do to kind of keep your sanity away from the work?
Oh, such a good question. I do stained glass, which is really fun. It's just a fun hobby. And it, you're using your hands. You can't Google something real quick, you know? And I think a lot of my hobbies are like, I want to get away from constantly being connected to everything, working in tech and as a screenwriter, you know, that it's good. I'm also hiking. I'm doing this. I presented myself with a challenge back in 2012, 2013, where I'm going to go to every state park in Georgia. And Georgia has 65, they keep adding them and change them around. So we have 65-ish state parks and I've been to about 36 now. So I'm like over halfway there to all the state parks in Georgia. So that's a fun thing. And just hiking, getting outdoors. I really, really love like national parks, state parks, road trips, any of that is my passion.
That's awesome. Yeah. I really like getting out too. I think, like you said, when you're on the internet all day, it's really nice to shut it off and just get out there and remember that fresher oxygen exists outside your house for sure. So real quick, I wanted to ask you, and if you're not, then I'll just cut it. But I wanted to ask you, you're a filmmaker as well?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
I thought so. Okay, cool. So what do you do outside of screenwriting in the film world? Because also I might be wrong, do you do freelance gigs too as like crew?
Yeah, I have. Mostly just with my friends, but they're still like good paying jobs because my friends, I'm in Atlanta, you know, my friends are starting to kind of move on up there and crew. So it's awesome. Yeah. I've been a first AD, which I'm not great at. Like I'm good at the people aspects of first AD, but maybe not. I know I'm sitting here like talking myself out of jobs, but I'm good at the people aspect, like the managing people aspects of it. I'm not so good at the, like, I don't know, like the logistics part of it, like the hard ass part of it. So, but what I really like to do is produce, and I'm actually producing something really cool. And I wish, oh man, I've got so many cool things in the pipeline. I am celebrating them, everyone, but I'm celebrating them quietly right now because I don't want to, jinx anything, but I am working with an actress who you've seen in things, and I wrote her a short, like, proof of concept, and we're shooting that on March 12th here in Atlanta. I'm really excited. Was able to crew that up super fast too, because I just have like this amazing crew that we love to work together. And then I'm also gosh, what else am I doing? I think that's the only thing I'm doing, like, filmmaking wise. I'm in post-production on a short that we shot back in February of 2021, and just my editor kept getting jobs. She works on The Walking Dead and things like that, so I keep, you know, my little crappy I'm gonna pay you $250 to do this keeps getting pushed to the wayside, which I understand. So that's where we are right now.
sweet. I was going to ask, though, you are producing something with Lisa J, right? At J Lisa J, I think is her handle. Everyone knows Lisa.
Everyone knows Lisa. She's amazing. Yeah. I was so lucky. She's one of the people I've met in person, and she's one of kind of my people. And yes, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot to mention this. I think it's kind of like a sore spot for me right now, because what happened is it's about a nonverbal and quadriplegic little girl with cerebral palsy, the script that we're doing called Grandpa. And I wanted to be authentic in casting. So I wanted, and it's based, the character's kind of based on my little sister who has cerebral palsy. So I wanted to cast an actress with cerebral palsy. And I found the perfect actress. She's amazing, but she's from Germany. And because of COVID, she had to go back to Germany, and we have been unable to get her back. And it is just like the tragedy of my life right now. I think I blocked it out. That's why I wasn't talking about it. But Lisa is going to direct that movie. It's a horror short. And Lisa, as we know, is the queen of horror. She makes everything better. And yeah, we're super excited. We just don't have, we've raised money for it too. So I keep having to tell the, you know, our backers, guys, like she's still in Germany. We still, and COVID is still happening. We're not going to kill somebody over, you know, a 12-minute short. So that's what's happening with Grandpa right now, but it's going to be amazing. It's going to be like the thing I'm the most proud of, I think.
Yeah, I am so excited for that, just because I know both of you from the Twitter space and I respect you. And I just think it's such a cool collab. And yeah, I hear you about having to tell backers. It's like, hold on, because the short that I shot last summer, our original target finished date was like done with post was going to be September 12th of 2021. And then I told them, I gave myself a little leeway and I was like, I will definitely have all the perks out by November. And now it is nearly February and we're just now getting into color.
I understand, please.
Yeah. So like I've just been sending them humiliating emails on the Kickstarter, just like, hey, me again, just letting you know, this is going to take a year longer than we anticipated. It's just so stupid.
Not to put you on the spot, but I am one of your backers. So thank you.
Oh, you are. You've been seeing my stupid emails. Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah, this is like a confession for me. Just like, listen, let me explain. But you know how it goes though with like indie filmmaking. So like some people who backed me who are just friends outside the film space, like I'm just like, oh, I feel so bad because like, yeah, for me, if I donate to a campaign, I literally don't care if it takes like 3 or 4 years because it is what it is with making an indie movie. It's just hard. And also, though, I think for filmmaker people, though, you don't really care about the perks. You're like, oh, I'm just giving you money to help, you know?
Exactly. But,
anyway, it's on the way, y'all. Ethan and Edna, it's going to be done by March. We just got our new colorists, so I'm really excited.
Fantastic. I can't wait myself. And yeah, also like the thing about crowdfunding to me, I give that money because I have faith in like you as a person. A lot of times it's more of that. Like, I just want you to be able to make a cool thing. Like it might not even be like that. I mean, your film does interest me, but the film may not even really interest me. It may not be something I would even, you know, normally seek out to watch, but it's, hey, I want to help my friend like kind of get to their, you know, their next step in their career.
Yeah, exact same. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think amongst like, you know, indie filmmakers, especially those like struggling, which I think is most of us, like 95% of indie filmmakers are struggling, and then the select five that are getting regular work are know how lucky they are. Absolutely. But yeah that's how it is for me. You just want to help out. Cool. Okay, so let's jump back to but yeah, cool. So do you direct?
No, I actually don't like directing. I've directed one thing. Okay. And I was like, nah, it's not for me. So I'm a writer producer, the weird hybrid.
That's really awesome. Maybe we'll collab someday, Jen, because I'm always looking for a producer who's just like a rock star producer. Because right now I bite off more than I can chew with my films, being like part producer who takes on more work than they should, because that's just who I am. So yeah, maybe someday, who knows?
Let's do it. Come to Atlanta. Yeah. We have a whole crew down here. You can stay in my little guest office. Actually, you've been looking at it as we've been recording this podcast. You can stay here. It's got a little couch bed, and yeah, we'll make a movie.
It looks very nice. Yeah. Honestly, like for real, like we might talk about this someday.
Let's do it.
I want to come to Atlanta because Missouri doesn't have good film tax credits. And I know Atlanta is the spot.
So. Yes. Oh my gosh. It's so easy to find. I mean, they're calling all the woodwork. It's great. Everybody's super busy, but you know, you, once you make connections, like I am this, okay, this is going to sound terrible. It's going to be like, I'm awesome. But what I mean is like, if you do what you say you're going to do, you give people interesting work and then you finish the film and then you, you put it in festivals and things like that, you're miles ahead of a lot of people who they might shoot their principal photography and then never get it edited, which I understand. Like we're both in that boat right now. But yeah, if you do interesting projects and you always pay people on time, you feed them well and stuff like that, like you are going to get a devoted crew. That's just the way you have to do it. Even if, you know, again, like even if the subject matter doesn't interest them or whatever, they just want to work and they will put aside like, you know, jobs with people who are jerks to maybe work for a little bit cheaper with you who is good to them. It's just so important.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree. Couldn't have said it better. I mean, money is one thing, but man, when you see those toxic film sets that no one is having a good time as compared to all the cast and crew were like just having fun. And it's like, you just know you're going to make a good film when everyone's having that much fun on your set.
It's absolutely true. And set those clear expectations. Like as a first AD, I know I'm in preacher mode now, but as a first AD, like there's a little spiel I always do on the first day. And I say, right before pictures up, I gather everybody up like, hey guys, you know, this is a respectful film set. You know, if anybody has a problem with somebody else, you come to me, you take it around. We are not racist. We are not sexist. We don't tell off color jokes that would offend somebody. Mm-hmm. That's just not who we are. You know, we are, you know, a loving, caring film set. And just setting that expectation, I have never had a problem once that expectation has been set on a film set. I think people love to know that, like, hey, I can come to her if I have a problem and that I'm not going to have to like navigate this kind of minefield of these, you know, crass jokes and things like that. And then people who might think it's okay to tell a crass joke or something like that, they know that, like, no, you are replaceable. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. It's just all about everyone feeling safe.
Yes.
And creating a safe environment. And even if you're someone like, you know, I hang out with all comedians and shit. So like, I'm used to like some jokes that are a little risky. However, you know, I've worked on my sets with my comedy friends, but we all know, you know, that like, there's a time and a place, you know, and, you don't just go around, making people feel uncomfortable if, you know, if they don't, if you walk into a comedy club, then that's different.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
But we are not in a comedy club right
different
now.
Space. Sure, exactly.
Yep. No, I think that's great that you do that. Setting an expectation for safety, public safety, both physical and emotional. I think that's just a great way to kick things off where everyone doesn't have to feel weird. Someone on Twitter had just posted the other day about having a real negative experience on a kind of bro-y, very male film set, and just like a lot of weird shit that happened to her, you know. And I just think that's great up front to be like, listen, we don't play that shit. It's not going to go down like that. So everyone, it's known. You've made it known, you know. And then if you do it, it's like, well, what did we tell you? You know. But yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so Jen, back to your writing. We're almost done too, by the way. Of the scripts that you've written, which is your favorite and why?
Oh my God. That's like asking me to choose between my children, which I don't have any.
That's why I love asking it, because I just want to see which ones you're going to kill.
Oh God. Okay. I know the one I should choose is the one that's kind of based on me and my family and stuff like that. But now I think it's Double Fault. My, my tennis script is my favorite script.
Yeah, that's awesome. By the way, which I want to read that. I don't know if you saw it in the email.
Oh, I may not have. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'll send it to everybody. I don't care. I'm very agnostic. I mean, not that you're just anybody, Andy, of course, but yeah, no, I'm happy to send it to you.
No, I mean, yeah, for sure. I'm a nobody. No, no, I would love to read it though. I didn't know if that got lost in translation or something, but anyway, so Double Fault is your favorite. Why is that?
Oh, I knew you were going to follow up with that. Okay. You know what? I love the characters. I think also, so this is my third pilot and I think I'm finally like getting the hang of pilots too. So it just seemed, you know, it seemed like a real TV show. I had some friends do a table read of it. Just a friend of mine put together an impromptu table read with her friends who are not screenwriters, and they had all these like great questions and they, you know, they played the parts also well. So I've kind of already seen it, which I think kind of helps me realize like, oh yeah, this is a show. This works. When my other scripts, I've not seen them. them table read. So I think, yeah, I think maybe that's what it is. Like I've seen that it actually works.
Yeah. That's pretty cool that you've seen it come to life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm super interested in that because whenever you started tweeting about Double Fault, I automatically wanted to read it because I just love any script that's diving into a subculture, mm-hmm. which I mean, tennis subculture, not really, but also like, I don't know a lot about tennis, so I want to live in that world. Any script, and I'm sure you can relate, any script that is going to bring me into a new world. And if they actually take care of me and like, it's a good read, that's just like such a satisfying read to me. You know, it's like the show Glow. Yes. On Netflix, which I have a wrestling script too. And when Glow came out, I went through a little depression because I wouldn't watch the pilot. Cause I was like, I can't, it's just too much. And then eventually I watched the pilot and I was like, and it's fantastic. Great.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yours is too. Yeah.
Say what?
I said, your script is good too, I'm sure.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Well, mine is like backyard wrestling. It's a little bit different, but, I love that Glow didn't go with, you know, like WWE level wrestling. It's still very much like a poor little indie wrestling league. And not that big. I love stuff like that, though, diving into a subculture that's not the mainstream, you know, and I'm hoping that Double Fault is kind of that same experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of like on all levels of tennis, kind of the crappy, you know, low level. And then but we're going to the highest levels, the elite. You're playing in Dubai and all that stuff. So, yeah, I just really love it. It's such a global, interesting sport. But there's also kind of undertones of like badness. There's a lot of sports gambling in tennis. A lot of like different countries' mafias are involved in that kind of thing. It's interesting.
That is interesting. That's a whole nother level of conflict too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that sounds great. Cool. So Jen, what is, I think I know the answer to this. What's a recent accomplishment of yours that you're proud of? Could be screenwriting related. Doesn't have to be. My guess would be the Notes app because it's such a tremendous thing to have accomplished. But what's going on with you? What do you think?
It is the Notes app, just because it's somewhat put to bed. Like all my other scripts, I'm in different stages of talking to people about them, or I'm like, oh my God, I have something. I wish I could break the news on here. Like an actor that you definitely have heard of. I am in talks to write a movie for them and some other actors you have definitely heard of. So
that's so exciting.
I know, oh my God, but it's just talks and, you know, I'm not going to, can't say anything. I don't want to tip my hand, but yeah, yes. I think Notes community, cause it is somewhat put to bed. I mean, of course we are going to, it's, if you can go over there, like it's not pretty. So the next step is making it easier to use and just making it a little bit prettier.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I was tired of like just working on it behind the scenes. Like, you know what, you guys, like, please join. And I'm just looking right now. We have 452 users. 37%. Wow. 37% are in groups now. So good job, guys.
That is amazing. Yeah, good job, everybody. And I'm sure that number is going to crank up because what, you released on Thursday and now it's Sunday?
Yeah, I know. I hope so.
That's amazing. That's like over 100 a day.
Yeah,
that's super, super cool. So Jen, Jennifer Dunn, at writer Jen Dunn, what are a few words of advice that you would give to your fellow writers out there, especially those just getting started?
Oh, good question. I show up for people. The relationships are the most important. Like you could be the best writer in the world, but if you're an asshole about it, you're not going to get anywhere. And then by showing up for people, I mean, just like congratulate people when something good happens to them. You know, if you got $5, give it to their crowdfunding. If you know, go to their table read, if you can, like just little things that you can do like that, where you make yourself a good, valuable member of the community. And the reason I say this too, is because when I started my business a long time ago, when I was 25, 26, I wasn't good at that kind of thing. And I was kind of like, well, you're all my competitors and I don't want to know anything about you. And of course, as soon as I started meeting these people who I thought were my competitors, my life just became so much richer. My business took off and did better. And yeah, so this kind of showing up for people, being supportive, being nice, making friends, doing Zooms, doing podcasts, this helps them, but it also really helps you.
Yeah, absolutely. Screenwriters who think of other screenwriters as their competition is just like the weirdest thing to me. Like, same. I mean, yeah, technically we're competing for jobs, I guess, but like, I don't know. I just don't think of that in a personal way. Like, I just really don't. Like, I mean, if we go for the same job and you get it, I might be jealous, but like, I don't know. I'm never going to look at other writers and be like, I hope they don't get that thing.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Or like whatever, because it's just, I don't know. It's really weird. I guess it's all just a personality thing. I've had stages of like, you know, when I was younger, maybe being more competitive than I should. And I'm a competitive person also. Like if you play a video game with me, I'm like a fucking dork with how competitive I can be. However, like with screenwriting, maybe because I think of it more as just like art and not like a competitive thing. Mm-hmm. I just want to see everyone make the highest level art that they can because I want to enjoy it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, I think that's great. Yeah. And, you know, me and Guy touched on this last time, but like the, and funny enough, this is kind of what the screenwriting Twitter drama was about this week. A part of it was the quote unquote toxic positivity. So I think you can go two ways with that, which the person in question who was bringing it up, I think they were being a little ridiculous about it. But what me and Guy were talking about is how it can feel a little toxically positive at times if you are someone who's not having the kind of run that you want, like with contests or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like every single person out there is making that quarterfinalist placement or getting an 8 on the blacklist and all these things. Like that's when Twitter can start to feel a little bit like that. Mm-hmm. But like, I forget what that person's angle even was on it. This is the first time I've ever brought up screenwriting Twitter drama on the podcast, but I'm just doing it because what he was saying was don't announce anything until basically the contract is signed or you are shooting the thing, that having a meeting doesn't mean anything, that placing in a contest as a quarterfinalist doesn't necessarily mean anything. And while there is some dumb truth to that, the other side of it is celebrate every win. Celebrate anything that you want to. Who cares?
Yeah.
Don't let anyone dictate your happiness on the internet.
Yeah.
It's fucking Twitter. Like that person just needs to quit being a nerd and just let people enjoy things. I hate the jaded screenwriter or the jaded filmmaker who has taken their lumps and now because of that everyone else has to suffer. That's not how it should be. If you fail, take it on the chin. We're all gonna fail. We all have failed and we're gonna keep failing. Anyway, this is just me blabbering about my feelings on that.
I love it, Andy, and I totally agree with you. Like, I can say whatever I want. You can say whatever you want. Like, I follow people on Twitter who say some things. I would be like, oh my God, please don't tweet that. Like, honey, that's going to maybe hurt you later. But you know what? This is their Twitter. So, like, whatever they want.
Yeah. And like, we also, I don't know about you, but like, I've had to learn some Twitter lessons. Like, not going to tweet something like that again, you know, and like, not even like super problematic shit, but like you said, like something that might hurt me later. Sometimes I think we tweet things as screenwriters that like, we only realize later, like, oh, that was such a newbie thing to say. And I just, you know, I seemed like I had no understanding of the business, which isn't a super attractive look for the people that you maybe want to impress in the industry. This isn't to give anybody self-consciousness out there. Again, tweet whatever you want. When the time is right for things to happen for you, they will happen.
Exactly.
We all have those, you know, if you're even remotely self-aware, you might think back to some things that you tweeted like, oh yeah, okay, I just had to learn better. But actual problematic things, you know, just you're going to work yourself out of the community.
Absolutely.
Which the person in question, I think, just did.
Yep, that's what happens. You know what? And there's my Granna, who I talk about a lot. She's my beloved Granna. I launched my app on her birthday because she's just like this amazing, wise person. And she used to say, it takes all kinds to make a world. And it does. And you know what? For that person, that negative person or any other negative person, like there's people for him too. Like let him go. He can go be with his part of the world. It's fine. Whatever. It just, like, you don't have the right to, you know, be in every community, and that's okay too. Like maybe there's a better community for you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I guess just while I have a stage right now, don't DM people being weird, guys. Just don't do that. It's just not cool. So if I have any kind of voice in the community, chill out with that stuff because it's not necessary.
Emphatic cosine from Jennifer Dunn right here. Do not DM people being weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you can DM people to be friendly. Like I get DMs, you know, and I try to answer as many as I can. Some just end up in my like request box and I don't see it. But it's not DMing that's a problem. It's DMing and being weird and inappropriate and creepy and manipulative, saying you have connections and, you know, I'll do this for you, blah, blah, blah. We should meet, da, 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 da. It's just weird, man. Just be a normal person. Just keep it chill because seeing stuff like that really sucks, especially when it happens to someone like the person that I recently happened to who is just a friendly, nice person. And it's just bullshit that she had to deal with that. She's not the first and sadly won't be the last, but again, while we have this moment, don't do it. Unless you're just coming in being normal and nice and trying to make a friendship with someone, stay out of the DMs because it's goofy.
Yeah, absolutely. Important Twitter etiquette right there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We all got to learn how to use the app and be a healthy community. Jen, so we've talked, about the Notes Community app, which is notescommunity.com. You can go to sign up but outside of that, is there anything else that you want to plug? Any projects going on or anything?
Oh gosh, let me think. No, I mean, nothing that like I can say much about or that, you know, I need support with. Oh, Notes Community. Let me just add too that it is totally free and there are no ads or anything like that. And I'm not selling your information. You know, sometimes you have to worry about that when something's free, you're the product. No, I just made it, you know, for us, by us. Now I do accept donations just to kind of help me offset the cost. I have spent about $1,700 on this plus my labor and some donated labor. I know, right?
Yeah, that's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, it is. That's mainly just labor, like, because engineers are, you know, they need to be paid. Like they have built this expertise for years and years and years, just like screenwriters need to be paid.
Of course.
So anywhere you go to Notes Community, there's a little Ko-fi link. So you can throw me $5, you know, whatever. I do appreciate that. It's hard for me to ask for money, I think, just because, you know, women, the way we're socialized and just kind of like writers and artists, we're like, oh no, I'll just do it for you. But yeah, I really would appreciate a little donation if you get something out of it. If you hate it and don't get something out of it, well then no, I don't want your donation.
Yeah, absolutely. Donations welcome for the community the Notes Community app. And they can find that on the website, the way to donate.
Yep. It's right there on the website at the bottom.
Sweet. Okay, cool. Well, it has been so great meeting you, talking to you over Zoom. Before this, all our communication was through text on Twitter. And it's just really cool. I think you're awesome. I think you're doing great things out there. And I think you're going to have a really great career in this space. It's just been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Well, thank you so much. I have one last thing to say. Andy has a magnificent mustache. So I encourage everybody to come on the podcast just so you get to experience this like I have.
It's the only way you get to see it. It's my pride and joy.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, guys. That is the end of the episode. That was Jennifer Dunn at Writer Jen Dunn, JennDunn. She's the best. And again, just to reiterate, like, her making the Notes Community app is such an awesome, kind of just beautiful thing for our community. I think the fact that she created that from a need in our community, and then me making this podcast out of total selfishness of just being like, I want to start a podcast. I wonder if my screenwriting friends will listen to me. It's just exciting that our community has, you know, created some art outside of the art that we're usually making, and I just hope that we get more cool things, because obviously we're just a group of like thousands of creative people, which is kind of dope. Go check out the Notes Community app, notescommunity.com, to sign up. Again, writers groups are just like such a cool thing, and I can speak from experience that even if nothing else, you're just going to make some friends and hang out with some writers, and that's always the best. It's why I made this podcast. So go check that out. Support Jen. She's awesome. Again, if you want to donate to the Notes Community app, you can do that on her website, thenotescommunity.com, at the bottom. And then also, if you want to donate to this podcast, you can do that at the link tree on our Twitter or Instagram, or on my link tree. There's a button there. It's a PayPal. It's all legit. I'm not trying to rip you off. If you have the money, cool. If not, no big deal. No, that's really it, guys. And I can't wait for episode 6. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Take care, everybody. Bye.
The Social Screenwriters Podcast.